Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome today to New Cyber Frontier. Today we have a practitioner that's going to tell us a lot about how to actually implement some cybersecurity. Does it every day, works for some great clients. Mr. Albert Whale, who is a CISSP and an expert in cybersecurity, also the founder and CEO of IT Security Solutions. Welcome today, Albert, and thanks for joining. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Sure, definitely. And hailing from the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania region. Definitely love there. Yeah. I grew up there, and we were talking about that a little bit before the show.
Yes, I think we're from the same neck of the woods in western Pennsylvania. It's Steeler country, right?
I think so. Is that the team up there?
So I think it's Steeler Nation, isn't it?
Something around there. So doing pretty good this year, huh? You follow them pretty close?
No, I don't. I have six kids, so I have other activities that take up my time. But yeah, I do. I do like seeing them win. You know, the Steel Curtain and Terry Bradshaw were my favorite teams. But Ben's doing pretty good, and this new running back we have that replaced the guy that just didn't want to sign his franchise tag, they're doing pretty good.
Yeah, I see that, and I haven't followed them that close this year either. And, you know, the last couple of years, it's kind of migrated away from football, but I think it's because it takes so much time, and I'm just pretty busy. That sounds like yourself. You're the same way.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's always something new that you have to learn or some new trick that the bad guys are employing that we want to mitigate in our solutions for our clients.
Yep, definitely. So tell me, you know, we got a little bit about where you're from and everything, and tell me about your background. How did you get into cybersecurity? Our young professionals always want to know, you know, how did you get started? What was your interest? Are they the same as mine? Am I like this guy? Talk to me about that.
You know, that's a really good question, and it happened on 9/11. Of all dates and times, I was watching the news in the morning and chatting with Netscape Instant Messenger, I think it was called AIM at the time, with a friend at Border Protection down in D.C., and we saw the planes hit. And, you know, that's when I put a line in the sand and said, I need to do more for cybersecurity in this country, because if they're able to do this over here, then they're already in our networks. Having six kids, I felt that it was important that I focus on cybersecurity, using my talent and experience as an electrical engineer, as a developer, as a networker. I was called shortly thereafter by the Pittsburgh FBI and asked them to assist in researching the September 17th watch list. And I consequently started the Pittsburgh FBI InfraGuard Member Alliance, now the InfraGuard Member Alliance. And the rest is history from there.
Interesting. So 9/11, wow, and you had a background in IT before that, or it sounded like developing? What was your background prior to that?
Yeah, my background was in IT. I'm a U.S. Navy veteran. I crushed four discs in my back and then service and couldn't do a blue-collar job, so I skipped over and went back to college and got my bachelor's degree in electrical engineering. Mm-hmm. And started building systems and computers, and then started doing consulting work, actually doing application development, network design, and building the first ISP in Western Pennsylvania running on Linux for telephone companies.
Interesting. And we have more in common even yet. Still, I was both myself and my co-host, Abe Thompson, our Navy, prior Navy, Navy veterans. So also... Definitely know where you're going with that. grew up there in Pennsylvania, went off to the Navy. What years did you serve in the Navy?
77 to 79.
Okay. That was a little bit before me. But let's take a break real quick, hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back to talk to Albert Whale.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. We're talking today with Albert Whale, who is a Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania native. We were just making the connections between our background and having such similar experiences. You said you were an electrical engineer. I am a computer engineer in my undergraduate, at least. But definitely great experience and background. You come from the military and the Navy especially. I know that experience. But Albert, tell me what it is you do now for cybersecurity and a little bit, maybe just a little intro to your company. We'll get more into it later. But what you do with your company, what kind of clients and things like that.
Well, what I'm doing now is trying to keep organizations safe from the hackers. And that involves a variety of talents and skills. Anything from doing penetration testing and security assessments or audits on, you know, how are they meeting compliance goals, all the way through helping software developers understand what the security controls are that they need to employ in their new software products to make them resistant from hacking. So there's a wide variety of experience levels that we employ to ensure that organizations remain secure, or in identifying how the hackers got in, doing forensic analysis after a breach to identify why did they get in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So I'd imagine you have a lot of clients you work with, and we always look for, it's always interesting to know some highlights about, you know, what you're finding to help people listening that are just in the industry or even not that are in the cybersecurity industry and want to get some advice on what to look for in their company that they can do themselves at first and then, you know, reach out to a professional later. But what types of things are you finding as the primary concerns that you're seeing and running across the most?
Yeah, probably the job number one is examining what's going on in your network. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what activities are normal, then the hackers are going to be easy to hide inside your network without your being able to understand that they're already there. Mm-hmm. So the number one job is examining the logs on the servers and consolidating all the log information to a centralized point, so that environment can be utilized to create sort of like a security operations center, so that you can identify activities which you consider normal and then research more on activities that are not normal.
Mm-hmm. So,
does that help?
Yeah, if I'm running my company and it's the first time I thought about this, should I just start going to my servers and pulling up logs? How would I go about maybe doing this or starting to do this?
Well, there's a lot of YouTube videos out there on how to examine event logs on Windows, or how to read the syslog information on Linux and Unix servers. It depends on the environment that you're actually working on. Mac also has logs that are run on the computer, and they all record different things. Like, some of them are application logs, some of them are system level logs that are looking at, you know, who's connecting to this computer from what IP address and so forth. There's a lot of different activities going on, and unless you're looking at them, it's going to be an uncomfortable situation to try to start by yourself. That's why we recommend a security assessment at least annually, because the bad guys are around and they're knocking on your door constantly.
Mm-hmm. So is there...
You want to be first to know where your weaknesses are before the bad guys tell you that they are already inside your network, right?
Yeah. Is there some software or tools that I would buy that, or look at that might even be free at first to start looking at my logs?
You know, I like standard console tools like Tail and More or Grep to find unusual activities, but it depends on what kind of an environment you're actually working on. There are some tools by third-party vendors that will do things like that. Splunk is one of them. They also require a high level of understanding of what are the log files before you can actually utilize the information inside of them. So it's not for the faint of heart, so to speak, mm-hmm. but if you have a deep technical base, it should be easy for you to get into the environment and understand more about what's going on.
Okay, so this is something where we're either going to hire a technical person or outsource this to a company that knows what they're doing.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, unless you have a team of 3 to 5 people that you want to dedicate to something like this, it's certainly not for the small business. It might be for the larger businesses that have operations that go across the country, something mm-hmm. like that.
Okay. So what do you see yourself working with the most, small, mid-sized, large businesses?
Well, you know, we've done a lot of different scale systems. We get called quite frequently on small to mid-sized problems, and those problems are usually after a breach. And we're finding out that if we can get in front of the breach, it costs about 10 times less to use our services than it does to try to fix things after the hackers have already been in the network. And the big benefit there is we don't have to try to chase down data to get it back, okay? Mm-hmm. Because once the genie's out of the bottle, it's hard to get them back in the bottle.
True. Okay, so... looking at it ahead of time, planning, what other kind of things do you recommend or do you see as the, you said log files, I think we talked about before about a couple more that you say are the biggest offenders. What are some other areas that are kind of those big offenders?
I would highly recommend that you encrypt your data both on your computers, in your office, or your laptops. It does take some additional resource power, but if you plan on that when you purchase the equipment, you can get hardware devices that will encrypt the data. And that would then require that the bad guys actually have physical access to your computers in addition to having the drives themselves. There are some memory tricks that are being used nowadays that they can get inside your computer while you're running it. And that's another reason for being vigilant and examining your logs, because you don't want them to compromise your computer and circumvent the encryption technology that you have. But by encrypting data, you make it another step harder for them to gain access to the information. And if you're watching what's going on in your network, then you have a better understanding of who's there and what's going on. So if you have, or if you're mindful about activities inside your network and you're able to monitor who's doing what inside your network and when it's occurring, for instance, at 2 o'clock in the morning, should there be a whole lot of traffic going on your network? Can you easily tell that? With our network monitoring tool that we have, it's called HitSafe, we can identify traffic going on 24 hours a day and record this information so that we can go back and review it or block specific countries from having access inside your environment. That's an easy way to determine whether or not you have an active breach or if potentially, you know, your cell phone that you brought into the office has also had a breach, because where's the virus scanner or firewall on your cell phone?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
And the problem is, those devices are persistently connected. They're never shut off, are they?
That's true, most of the time, huh?
Exactly. Well, my kids burn up chargers every day saying, Dad, can I have a new phone charger? And I say, well, you got a job. Go buy one.
Definitely.
You know, after you give them chargers for 5 years, I think that's enough, don't you?
Yeah. Well, let's take a break real quick and hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. We're here broadcasting from the Secure Set Academy studio in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And we have on with us Albert Whale, who is the founder and CEO of IT Security Solutions. And he was going through some of the things that they see the most in their consulting services and bringing in kind of operational network security. And what are the low-hanging fruit? What are the things that we'd start looking at first? We talked about one, security assessments, and then looking at logs, knowing what's going on in your different systems. Encrypting data was the last thing we talked about, and I think you had given me one more, but what's that next top area that you kind of get involved with the most?
Yeah, it kind of goes hand in hand with the security assessment deal, and that's making sure that your Active Directory server is locked down, because, you know, the unique methodology that these hackers employ is being able to get access to the directory server with authentication from a single user and then pivoting from that single user to an administrator state. But if you're not looking for activities in your network by examining the logs and you haven't done a security assessment, these are treasures that the hackers love to try to take advantage of so that they can get further into your environment and leverage what access they have to get the highest level available and then be inside your network for a lot longer to come.
Okay, so if you are your Active Directory, somebody's already in, you said you deal a lot with kind of the forensics after an attack. How do you find it out? What's the next steps? If somebody thinks they have an attack or they haven't done an assessment in a while, what's step one?
Well, you know, I use some proprietary methodologies to go into Windows boxes and examine some of the logs that most people aren't taking a look at. And I'd rather not go into it here because it gives too many details to the bad guys. But I'll be happy to talk to people offline in order to help them understand what's going on.
Okay. So is there a tool that you recommend, maybe something free that somebody could get and evaluate if there's a problem in their Active Directory?
There are plenty of tools, but the problem is the tools are only as good as the people that designed them. So, you know, it's the old buyer beware. Make sure that you're working with trained professionals and let them tell you what they found initially, and then you can query them about things that you're concerned about, such as your Active Directory server and whether or not it can be exploited.
Okay. If anything else you recommend to, you know, somebody starting to look at it, or even somebody that has had a data breach, what's the process you recommend to your clients after they've had a data breach?
Well, what I like to do is start to look at what's going on inside the network. I look at the actual traffic and we use our new tool called ItSafe to monitor activities going on through the network directly. And we can see what kind of communications are being used, where they're going to, and, you know, whether or not these protocols and communication connections are really necessary. Mm-hmm. In some situations, I've noticed that the network time protocol for a company in Pittsburgh was communicating to the country of Japan. And if you're looking for a network time protocol in Pittsburgh, I would think that there's plenty of universities and the atomic clock here in the United States that might be a better choice for NTP. So that's an activity that looks like malicious content could be being filtered out, as well as DNS. You know, where are your DNS queries coming from? Where are they going to? And how many are coming all at the same time? A recent exploit was just identified this past week, which allowed attackers to zip up a plethora of domains and get more information from your DNS servers and then hide the data and get it out to them directly.
Okay, so
there's a lot of different activities going on, and one tool is not going to do this.
Okay, so explain DNS. When we use acronyms, I like to have the people explain what that means and what it is to a kind of a layperson.
DNS is called the domain name system. Basically, it's a way to identify the computer's number, the IP address that's associated with accessing that computer, with an actual name. For instance, everybody knows google.com, but not too many people know the DNS address 8.8.8.8, which is associated with google.com. So Google's gone out and, along with a couple other organizations, and the initials are escaping me at this time, but there are a group of root master servers around the globe which identify the names that are registered and the actual IP addresses and how to get to those domains. So there's hierarchical domains for the .coms, the .edus, the .govs, and then for one for each of those countries. And then they distribute the information for each of the zones, like Intel, Apple, CMU, things of that nature, into directed IP addresses that can then further define the www, the web page, or the mail servers, or different organizational assets that are needed to get into the company. Does that give you enough information on DNS?
Well, I hope so, and I just asked that you use the acronym, so I always say if we use an acronym, we'll explain what it means. But thanks for taking that kind of sidebar.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, you had said you do a lot of work for like law firms and firm-type organizations. I have had quite a few lawyers that listen to the show that have let me know that they do. Tell them what you see and what you would recommend for those type of institutions or law firms, the type of things that you see as their most common problems you run into.
So the most common problem is they need to do an annual assessment by an outside certified third party. Going on and assuming that the IT department knows exactly what they're doing is going to be asking for trouble. The IT people are very well capable of handling configuring systems and maintaining the configurations and things of that nature, but they're not experienced in what cybersecurity is and how to eliminate access for attackers through the tools that they're managing, and maybe not even configuring the environment correctly. And that's why an outside assessment is essential in order to get things done. And then I would go one step further. Once you have an assessment done, mix it up with a couple different providers, because you're going to get a different perspective about the security on your environment when you talk to different people. So by employing these, expenses, so to speak, for a security assessment on an annual basis, you're actually generating revenue. because the cost of a breach by the Ponemon Institute and IBM studies shows that a lot of businesses are closing their doors after having a $7.8 billion data breach assessed to them because they didn't do cybersecurity the right way. Those are business closing events. And if you can keep the doors open and afford to pay cybersecurity professionals on an annual basis to help you do that, then I highly recommend that that's the methodology you should be employing.
Okay. So as far as yourself, who do you leave it open up to say what types of clients you service, what types of products you offer, who should reach out to you, and what can you do for them?
Well, we work with a variety of clients. Our target verticals are banking and financials, healthcare, utilities. But recently, we've also been contacted by accounting firms and law firms. These are organizations that have data that they want to hold secure and have compliance requirements to make sure that the bad guys don't get them. People that should be contacting us are people with fiduciary responsibility in organizations. They want to ensure that their security teams have set up the practice and the perimeter as well as the controls internally to ensure that their organization is safe. It could be anybody from the IT manager all the way to the CEO. We've worked with them all, and we recommend that you call us before the breach rather than afterwards, although we're happy to work with you later. It just takes a little longer, and it costs a lot more to mitigate a breach after the fact. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So, and how would they reach out and get a hold of you?
The company name is IT Security Solutions. Our website is it-security-solutions.com. And my email address is albert.whale, W-H-A-L-E, at IT Security Solutions. Or you can just look for info. Or you can look me up online on LinkedIn. I have quite a following on LinkedIn directly. One of those methods should be able to help you connect with us. Our phone number is 412-889-6870.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for being on the show today. And it's been definitely interesting to hear your perspective from what you work in. And been a great conversation here. Thanks a lot, Albert.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed it. I hope everybody got some information out of that that they didn't know of before the show.
Yeah, and go Steelers, right?
Go Steelers.
Yeah.
I have one that lives in my neighborhood, T.J. Watt.
Oh, awesome. All right, well, have a great day. Bye.
Thanks, you too. Bye now.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.